There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
My guest this week thought 2020 was pretty great. I'll let him tell you why.
2020 has been my favorite year. Out of all the years, this has been the best one. I mean, there's aliens. They said there's UFOs. And no one cares. That's... What kind of year could you have that you could sneak in? Hey, everybody, on the news. They're at the end of the news. They go, there's UFOs. And you're like, oh, do they have COVID? And you're like, no. Like, I don't know. They won't get tested. But I told my wife that. I said, they said there's UFOs. And she just went about her day. I mean, just, you might even watch this and be like, oh, I didn't even hear that. And that's the point. That's how amazing 2020 has been.
This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and today I am so thrilled to welcome one of my favorite stand-up comics back on the podcast, Nate Bargatze. This week, Nate's new hour-long special, The Greatest Average American, lands on Netflix. It's one of the first big specials taped during the COVID era, and it is hilarious. Nate is one of those comedians who isn't quite a household name yet, but after this special, in my opinion at least, he belongs in that upper tier that includes previous guests on this show like Jim Gaffigan and Tig Notaro. If you want to hear about Nate's early days as a comic, definitely check out his first appearance on The Last Laugh from all the way back in July of 2019. For this episode, we really focused in on how he managed to pull off the new special during a time when most comedians had more or less given up on performing live. It was a really fun talk, and I hope you enjoy it. Here's me with Nate Bargatze. Well, good to see you. It's been, it feels like it's been about a million years since we recorded our first episode of this podcast in the studio in Burbank.
Crazy.
It was the 17th episode of The Last Laugh you were on, and now we're on, I believe, episode 102. So it's been a journey. I didn't bring it down.
You know, that's what's good. I didn't bring it. You know, it didn't come crashing down.
17. That's good. It's no, like you only made it better. Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. So I was. It was funny. I was a fan of yours before you were on my podcast, but I know you gained at least a couple new fans because they're my in-laws. And you are now their favorite comedian of all time. They're obsessed with you, and they really can't wait for your new special.
That's awesome. I love it. I always jokingly say I'm a comic's parents comic.
Yeah, like they're always, it's true. It's true.
Yeah, yeah, they love it. So I'll take it. Yeah, that's awesome. Tell them thank you.
I will. They're very excited for the new special, and I got to see it already, and I just thought it was incredible. Your new Netflix special. It's The Greatest Average American. Is that the title?
Yeah, yeah, that's where we're going. We're gonna go with that. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really fascinated by just how you were able to pull this off during this past year, and I really thought it's your best hour yet. So it's very cool. How did this happen that you, because not too many people have been putting out specials taped over this past year.
No, yeah, not at all. I appreciate it. I'm glad to hear that. I am, yeah, a little nervous about this one because it was how it came about. Just because it's like, you know, it was normally, I kind of roughly had close to an hour before the pandemic started, but I would have had 50 theater shows to, you know, just hone in that hour, probably get a little bit more here and there. And then all that kind of went away. And so then, we weren't doing anything. And I thought, all right, I was hoping to tape a special. I mean, this timeline that we're on, I kind of wanted to be on for this special to come out. It's been 2 years basically since my last one. So I kind of was like, all right, I bet I'm not going to get to be on this timeline. And then it ended up kind of working out. And I did drive-in movie theater dates to kind of warm up for this. So you're just a little nervous, you know, I mean, you're always nervous before a special comes out. I don't know, because you just, you do think, you're like, the most people are about to see this. And like, you know, and I've been doing it live and it's going good. But now it's all these people, I'm not there. You know what I mean? Like, you feel like in control. Like if I'm, if you're watching me live, like I can control what you, you know, you're like, all right, I'm here. I can be put out fires and people are just going to be at home watching. So you're always just a little nervous when it's about to come out that you're like, God, what if this could be terrible? You know, you're like, I have no idea.
Yeah. What was the, especially when you're performing drive-ins for cars, I imagine it's very difficult to judge whether something's funny or not.
You can't really do new stuff. It was very hard. It's like a new joke. You know, you were kind of like, you worked on your, it's like the rhythm of it. You're able to get that. And the, yeah, new jokes. I mean, you just couldn't, you get no response. I mean, you could hear some people sometimes up front, some more better than others in the fact where you could hear someone. But some of the shows were the best shows I've ever done in my career. I mean, one in Chicago specifically was, I'll remember it for the rest of my life. I mean, it was 500 cars in this parking lot. It's 40 degrees. It's raining, you know, like a couple of people sitting out front, but basically everybody's kind of got to stay in their cars. It's cold. And yeah,
they're
when I
warm.
Walk,
they're probably warm. You're cold.
They felt unbelievable. They had short yeah. sleeves on. They're like, it's hot. They roll the window down because it's too hot. And then when I walked out on stage, they all like, they would honk and flash their light. And then when they laughed at a joke, they would honk as laugh. And it was like little quick, like beep, 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 beep. And it's like, you kind of learn that you're like, oh, I just need some noise, you know, like you just need a response.
Yeah, you need something.
You need something. And so to see that and to get, you know, I felt like it's the only thing I could ever have to like a Woodstock moment of just this kind of magical thing. Like we're all in this global pandemic. We're in a parking lot. It's cold outside and we're doing a show. So some of them were, they were all amazing in their own ways. But I mean, it's definitely something you're like, I'm not like, I want to go just do those now. Yeah, I'm ready to get back into theaters. So, but it's good
special,
to do.
The special is not for cars, but it is outside.
Yeah.
So when did you tape it and how did that all work?
I think it was like October, the end of October. And everybody had to get tested. The audience had to get tested. It was only 100 people. They all had to wear masks the whole show, you know, social distance.
It was at Universal Studios?
Universal Studios outside there. And they did really good about making it. You know, we have some stuff happen during it where you can tell that we're outside.
Yeah, helicopters.
Helicopters. And so with the helicopters, by the way, we found out it was a police chase. We did not, because it was a weird amount of helicopters.
Yeah. Like LA always has helicopters, but yeah, it was like,
golly, why are these keep coming? And so we found out that, this guy, Troy Miller, that the director of it, like he did really good, like making it look, he did a lot of people where, you know, you didn't want it to feel, whereas like, if you watch this in 2 years or, you know, you're like, it was like a time piece, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, for a minute when I was watching, I couldn't even tell that you were outside. It's like, it looks really good. And,
it looks good.
And, yeah. I mean, but a crowd of 100 for a special is very small, right? I mean, for as far as what most people are doing for their specials, what was your last special? How many people were you performing in front of?
I mean, 1,000. I think it was 1,000 each show. Yeah, yeah, it's nothing. Yeah, it's what, and that's what's hard is like timing that, the laughter and like getting the rhythm right on that. I mean, that was extremely hard to get because it was, you know, like the first show. So we do an hour. You do two shows for people listening if they don't know, but you take two shows, you edit, usually you try to edit the best, usually basically try to get one show. And usually every time you tape a special after the first show, they're always like, we got it. We're good. You can, yeah. You can go mess around on the second show. Have fun. Don't worry about it. We have the special.
This one's just for fun. Yeah.
This one's for fun. And so, but because I can't when they had masks on and I can't hear their laugh. And then I realized like, I got kind of used to not hearing their laughs, but when I can see them, but I can't see their faces. It's not like they're in cars and I'm just imagining. It's like, no, the person's right there. I see that person's face, but I can't see them smile. And so the first show I was, you know, my set was averaging out to like 64 minutes. I did 43 minutes first show. It was zipped up that tight just because it was, you know, the rhythm was kind of gone. And so this was the first special after that first show where they were like, yeah, we definitely don't have it. So, I mean, the second show is so important.
How did you adjust for the second show then?
So they put, So we they have mics on all the tables. And so we put some of that, more of that in the monitor so I can kind of at least hear their laugh a little bit more. And then I had to slow down. I probably even had some jokes that I put in that I wasn't probably planning on it. Cause it's like, I mean, it's just so funny. Cause it's, if you're in a theater, sometimes something that could take 40 minutes can take an hour. And then sometimes something that can take an hour, if you're in a weird situation, you can tell it all in 40 minutes. And it's really depending on just the energy of the crowd. And the crowd was amazing, but just the scenario that we're in, you can't do it. So at the second show, I was very aware that I knew I needed to do more time. And we put that in. And so I just kind of, I just kind of try to keep my pace a little bit slower and, just like time it out and pace it out a little bit better than I did the first show. So that's what we did.
The whole opening of the hour is really about COVID and about this moment that we're in. And there's something that's really, you can feel how cathartic it is for people laughing at that. And I think people at home will too. Is that something that you really thought about, like putting that up front and kind of addressing this weird time that we've all been going through?
Yeah, I figured you had to address it. You know what I mean? Like there was no way not. You don't want to be crazy and just so you're up there doing a special. We're outside and the audience has masks.
Yeah.
So it's like I always try to address something in a way that's like kind of stays, it's like you're not trying to make some big statement and you're not trying to like change anybody's life. It's like just being funny about whatever's happening. So I was like, I want to do it up top just a little bit and then just get into my act. I mean, you know, the stuff that I've worked on. And so that was the plan with it. And then, we had with the helicopters flying, you end up having a bunch of stuff that was kind of like wrapped the moment up kind of in its own way without even trying. You're kind of like, yeah, you did it outside. It's all this kind of weird stuff. And so I was glad to get the jokes in about COVID and make some, address it, and then be able to move on and then just do my act.
I can tell you one thing that is canceled for sure. Coughing in public, that's over. You go into a restaurant and just drink water wrong. You just got to get up and go to your car and drive home. The whole restaurant just stares at you. It's going to be hardest on my parents because my parents, there's nothing more they love than coughing in public. It's one of their favorite things to do. I mean, I haven't had a conversation with my dad in 10 years without him choking the whole time.
Yeah, I love the line that you have that's sort of like, you want to be in the middle on COVID. You don't want to be too extreme in either direction. And I'm wondering, is that sort of how you came to feel about it after, several months of, especially because you're someone is doing some traveling around, you're seeing sort of how different states are dealing with it. And, whereas a lot of people are just like only in their own place and they don't know, you don't have as much of a sense of how the rest of the country is dealing with it. So how did you kind of come down on finding that middle?
I do want to be, I think with everything. It's not bad. It's not bad to be in the middle. There's times where, you got to wear a mask and there's times where you're like, I probably don't need it here. It should just be reasonable. So in the middle is not a bad place to be right now because you make jokes from the middle because the sides can be so far. So you can be pretty funny in the middle right now and you get so it's not a bad place to be.
Finding, and you're sort of being in the middle, as you said, it's both on COVID, but I'm sure it's also, COVID and all that stuff has become so politicized. So do you feel like that's true for you as well, that you try to find that middle so that you can appeal to sort of people all over the country?
Yeah, I've never had the real big desire to offend anybody or like, not that there's a lot of comics that like that and they're great at it.
As you said, you're the parents' favorite comedian. So
I am. You got to be, just be left alone, right in the middle. Yeah, I don't, I never really try to make fun of, I always make fun of myself a lot. I like being self-deprecating. And I've always looked at it as like, you can either laugh with me or laugh at me. Either way, it doesn't matter to me.
You're cool either way.
And they're both count as laughs, so I'll take them. and so it's, you just want to be, there's enough of that other stuff, being like political, being topical, that's all it is. Politics is like overwhelmed. I mean, every facet of entertainment, you can't get away from it. So I'd like just being like an outlet that's, you can trust that it's like, you're not going to gonna get lectured. I'm not gonna lecture you about who you should vote for. So, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care. Do whatever you want to go do. And so, yeah, I like being just like that, and just about being funny. And that's what I think. That's what comedy is to me.
Has that gotten any harder in recent years? Sort of as things get crazier in the country, as things get more polarized, you notice that it's more difficult to avoid those things?
It definitely is. And then if I do it, I try to do it in a way, you know, like talking about COVID was like, you try to do it in a way where it kind of rides down the middle, where you're making fun of the situation. It's definitely hard because there's times where, you know, you always hear people talk about their platform and like, you know, it's like, I got to say stuff. You got to be out there doing stuff. And I just don't, you know, I like to, I think too many people use their platform and they shouldn't. And then I think, you know, it's like if we're going to talk about platform, my platform is that you can come to me and know I'm not going to do that to you. Like, that's what it should be. And that's what I'm not going to say I'm always going to do that. I have no idea. I'm very open to like everything changes. I have, you know, I might become a different person at some point. Who knows? But right now, I know that you have enough people. An audience has enough people telling them what to do. They don't need me telling them what to do. I didn't go to college. education is not, it's not a lot. My opinion does not matter. It's not going to change your, I'm just there to make you that mental break. You know, that's, I get a lot of messages and it's for those people that are just like, I needed it. Like I'm going through, it's just, people are going through so much right now that they just need, like, they just want some jokes, man. Like they just want to be like, just make me laugh. And like, And then I can like relax.
You know, talking about not going to college, I love all the sections in the new special too about homework and trying to, you know, work with your daughter. Is that something that's been sort of an even more of a challenge this past year? Because I think everyone who's a parent is dealing with, you know, the Zoom school and trying to, you know, parenting has gotten even harder. So is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah. I mean, parenting is, I mean, there's a lot of people that be more parents now than they probably ever did. Your kids would go to school and, you know, we had a good system and the system's falling apart. So yeah, it's definitely gotten harder. She does, our daughters are where she's been back in school though. They've been able to go back. So that's been good. And then, so I haven't experienced it to the full, you know, force that people in California or people in other places where their kids are not, you know, you just watch them. I just feel bad. You know, it's a tough situation and you feel bad for these, you know, the kids and the parents. I mean, a lot of these kids, they need that interaction. They need to be out. They need to be, you know, we need to be doing stuff. We're meant to like hang out and talk and be sociable. And so, hopefully, you know, I don't know. Hopefully it gets back. We've been lucky that we haven't, where I live, my neighborhood, there's a bunch of little girls that are my daughter's age. And so they've gotten very close because they've played a lot together. So we've at least, you know, I think a lot of people have had it just like that, where you're like, all right, you know, kind of old school, where you're just like, you just run into other people's houses.
We're doing homework too. Our daughter's starting to bring it all home. Homework's fun. First and second grade was awesome. Third grade, you're like, okay. They throw some stuff in. You're like, oh, all right. It's okay. Learning it earlier than we used to, huh? I don't even know if that's true, but she brought home Common Core math. That's fun. It's a new math they invented. No heads up. Just give it to parents that never learned it. It's just a whole new. I mean, it's unbelievable. Why when they bring it home, you got to watch a 40-minute YouTube video on Common Core math? I don't even understand it. If you know it, if you don't know Common Core, it's just a new math. And the goal of Common Core is to use one sheet of paper for every problem. You just want to keep breaking the problem down. You put the problem at the top, and it just keeps going. And then what's even funnier is you see old math in the middle of it. As you break it down, old math gets in there, and you're like, oh, just do that at the top. I don't even know what we're doing. And it's not like old math isn't working. I mean, old math's doing, I don't get incorrect change everywhere just going, this stupid old math. It's a long way to get to the same answer. I told my wife, I go, it feels like if you knocked on my front door and I opened it and you said, can I come in? And I was like, do you mind walking in and coming in through the back door? And you'd be like, does the front door not work? I'm like, nah, it works. I use it. A lot of people still use it. But the new way is to go jump the fence and come in the back and meet me at this same spot.
So, you know, in addition to this special being really one of the first big specials this past year. You also did the actual first late night stand-up spot during the lockdown and everything on Jimmy Fallon's show, right? How did that come together? Because that was very cool to see at a time when there just was no stand-up on TV.
Yeah, I was very excited to do it. I like doing something where it's like that, where it's like you're the first to get to do it. We went and shot it in Huntsville, Alabama, and they were able to do like half capacity, you know, like going to a restaurant, everybody spread out, everybody had masks, all that kind of stuff. So I was talking to Tonight Show about doing something, and I didn't want to do, like, I don't want to do a set with a Zoom, you know, it's like this kind of thing. And it was like, that's going to be
that
bad.
That wouldn't have worked well.
No. And so then we were just talking about it, and Michael Cox, who booked the stand-ups on there, he's just really great. And he's, you know, and he was like, let's just see what we can, you know, because they were starting to do some live entertainment coming back with bands and stuff like that. So we were just trying to find the right place. And I mean, I told him, I was like, look, I want to be the first one. And I mean, I think they wanted to be the first two to have it back. So we just luckily found a place for it and was able to go down. And this comedian, Leanne Morgan, is very funny. And she was at Huntsville that weekend. She let me kind of jump on the show and film. And then we were able to do it. And it was funny, but it was a Tonight Show set that was obviously very different. Even we were making sure, you know, you had to show like the signs of like, you know, this mask up, everybody's wearing masks.
Yeah, this is legit.
It's legit. You know, you feel like you got to prove to everybody we're not doing something crazy. And so it was definitely cool to just get something back out, you know, on TV.
And you were able to work out some of the stuff that ended up in the special.
Yeah. Said to do it, see what it is. I really liked getting those COVID jokes out because I knew I was going to do them on the special because you will, obviously when you do Tonight shows, not always, but you don't really write material specifically for that Tonight show. You put it on a special. And I was glad to get those out because you get so nervous that so many comedians are going to come up with COVID jokes. And so you don't want, you know, come up with a COVID joke.
Put your stamp on it.
You want to be like, I did it. No, here's when I did mine. And then, and so you get it out and I got it that way. So I was very happy for that reason alone too, you know.
And you have to go every time you go to a restaurant too. Now they take your temperature. It's just a teenager that doesn't know what he's doing. Doesn't even hold it up near my head. He's just like 45 degrees. You're good. You're like, am I? He's not even fazed by it. He's like, I'm like, dude, I think I'm dead. I should go to the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, I was hoping that was going to be sort of like the first of that. We would see a lot of those types of, you know, remote stand-up segments on late night TV, and there really hasn't been. And it's a bummer because like that late night TV is like one of the only places where that kind of where stand-ups get, you know, 5 minutes of big exposure in that way.
And honestly, they should do it. They need it more now than ever. I mean, comics are the best for this kind of scenario where it's making fun of, you know, situation that we're in. You need that release valve. I know that Mike Vecchione's doing it one tonight on Tonight Show. I think in studio. So I don't know. I don't know if an audience is there or not, but he's obviously unbelievably funny. So it will be great to see what he does.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked when you were on the podcast before a little bit about sort of your early late night appearances, but I mean, what did those mean for you as a comic at the time, just because it's all of a sudden, I mean, I'm sure when the first ones that you're doing, that's the biggest audience that you've had to that point, right?
Yeah, it's the when you first do it, you know, nothing's like, it doesn't go from like where you're like, you're just selling theaters out or something. Like, there's no big giant leap. You always heard that with Carson, but you know, I even think with Carson, it wasn't like it was everybody. Like Steve Martin said, he did it 12 times maybe or something before it kind of caught on. So but when you do them, it's like, yes, the audience that you get in front of their audience, that Tonight Show audience. And it's kind of, it's a mainstream thing. So it's, as a comedian, it's just a huge thing to have on your resume that you've done. And then to consistently get to do it and to have that outlet, you know, because you go between specials every couple of years and you're doing live shows. And so it's, you know, yeah, you do sometimes need a place to be like, where can I pop up, you know, for comic, not where we're actors, where we can pop up on TV shows. It's like, you can pop up on a late night set and be like, do a little funny thing and then get out just to, I don't know, just stay in that world a little bit. So it's, they're awesome and they're great to do. And I mean, the Tonight Show's been nothing. They've been wonderful to me. And so I love, you know, I love being a part of it.
I feel like you've worked more than most people have in this past year. And there's like some standups who haven't gotten on stage in a year.
Yeah.
Was it really, could you have imagined doing that? Or was it like you kind of have to do this and you figured out a way to make it happen?
You feel like you have to do it. Like you're just like dying to get out. I mean, it was definitely, you know, I started a podcast and like, I was mm-hmm. just to be doing something. Like it was like, I wanted to, you know, should you feel productive? Cause it's like, you just get so, you know, I mean, you see how people can get depressed and you can get, especially cause it was like our, you know, I had a lot of people that work, like my neighbors that have like real jobs. Like, you know, a lot of them got busier than they ever did. They just worked from home. And so like they somewhat have a normal life. And then it was like, what I was doing was like, well, I'm completely done. You know, live performing yeah. was like the main thing that they can't go do. And so you just wanted to get out and you want to do it safe. You don't want to get just crushed by everybody being like, why are you going out? Like, why are you doing that? And so that's when those drive-ins, like when I told my agents, I was like, look, if I can do them, I want to do them. And then they kind of came about and I was like, yeah, let's go. And then it's like, we went and set that up. And then this Netflix came back and was like, look, we think we can tape this special now. We have a way to do it where it's all the whatever the rules that you got to do it by. And so it kind of worked out together that it was like I was at least was going to get to do something.
Was that special kind of in the works before everything shut down?
I mean, the plan of doing it was, I mean, so like, you know, I have no idea. All this could go away. I'm always aware that all this could fall apart.
You feel like that?
I always feel like that. I always just, you know, I don't think you ever want to take anything for granted. And I don't think it produces good, whatever. You should always be trying to be getting better. And just, you know, I'm not owed this job. I'm lucky to have a job that I love and it's not owed to me. I don't deserve it in a way. It's like, I got to earn it. I got to earn it every time I go. If you want people to keep coming out to see you, you got to earn it. And I need to be funny. And so you're always aware of that. And with Netflix, I would like to do a special every 2 years. And then, you know, like my sixth one will be when I'm 50. And, you know, and I like with my daughter opening, I have ideas to do different stuff with that. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, and just kind of build it. And like that way you have, you know, I don't know, you just start throwing some specials out. I mean, that's, you know, to be the best guys, the best comics, they all, you know, they just have so many specials and they're good. And like, so it's like the pressure of making all these specials be really good and stand out. You know, that's what it's, I don't know, that's what it's about. That's what we're trying to do. That's what I want to be. I want to be a stand-up and I want to try to be one of the best. So you got to do specials.
Coming up, Nate talks about the heartbreak of finding out ABC decided not to pick up his sitcom pilot and where he sees himself in the comedy pantheon now that he's no longer an up-and-comer.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're enjoying this episode, please hit subscribe. You can check out everything from our free archive, including great conversations with some of the comics Nate mentions in this episode, like Bill Burr and Dan Soder. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Tuesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts to let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to Nate Bargatze. You know, again, when you were on last time, we were talking about that ABC pilot that you were working on. And I know, obviously, that didn't work out. I don't want to bring too much of a bummer to this. But
nowhere.
But how did your priorities change or your thoughts about your career change when you sort of realized that wasn't going to be going forward?
You go through a ton. I mean, you go, well, I'm done. You know, I've tried to make a lot of shows and I've sold shows. They just don't go. And this one was the farthest we ever got where we shot a pilot. And,
And it was with Gerard Carmichael, I know. So he has a pretty good track record. So I'm sure you were hopeful. You know, I was hopeful. I was looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I thought, we had a great cast. Drew Goddard was directing it. And so we had a lot. We had the names on it that we felt we should have had on it. And it just didn't work out. And it is what it is. I mean, the good thing about stand-up is I don't like that side of entertainment, making a TV show. I still want to do that. And I still will continue to try to do that. I mean, right when they tell you no, you're like, I'm not trying ever again, dude. I don't, you go through like a world of like, I don't need to do any of this, dude. I'll do stand-up. I hate all of it. Like you just get mad. And then you kind of calm down. And then you think, it's like, look, I can go try to make these shows. I can take these. That's winning. That's like lightning in a bottle if that works out. And so I can treat it as that. As far as I have my stand-up, I've created it. It's my world. I like being in this world. I'm in way more control of what goes on in stand-up. So, and now with Netflix and these specials, I mean, there's an argument that you don't even need these shows. Like you don't, it's like you can be like, you're popping up every couple of years on a special. If you start selling out, if you can get to the point where you sell to arenas, I mean, that's the whole goal of this anyway, is to get to that.
Hoping that arenas come back. That would be good.
If they come back, maybe I can sell them out now because no one can be there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like 10% capacity.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I'm selling. I'm on an arena tour right now. so it's like doing that kind of show is, I still want to do it. I would love to do it. I really enjoyed the process of it and I'll keep trying and we'll see if it ever happens. And if it does, it'll be awesome. And if it doesn't, it is what it is. But you just keep trying.
Is it the kind of thing where like that show as it was could go somewhere else? Or is it like you have to kind of start over?
You got to start over. It was, that's the hardest part. I mean, dude, making a show is, there's so many things that, so like you negotiate your contracts before you tape the before you even do the show, which is kind of crazy because they're basically like, here's what you can do if the show goes. And you'd almost be like, well, don't even tell me that.
Yeah.
They tell you all this stuff, like, you're shooting all these pictures. I mean, it feels, we do these photo shoots. You're like, golly,
yeah,
dude, this
feels
is
very
like,
real.
You're like, this is like Hollywood. This is showbiz, all this stuff. And then they're just like, no. And you're like, so it's a pretty crazy ride. It's would be fun. I would love it. I would love to get to do it. And I want to keep trying to do it. And hopefully, if you get your stand up big enough, then maybe, those yeses become, they say yes more. I mean, we're in a business of no's. Most, you're told no most the time. And so you just got to take advantage of it when you get told yes.
Yeah, well, I think you're, as far as stand-up goes, you're really just keep ascending, in my mind. And I think in just getting bigger and bigger, talking about getting towards, your sixth special when you're 50. I mean, how do you think about your place in the stand-up world? Because obviously, you kind of were, when you start out, you're looking up to people and trying to get better, but now it does seem like you're kind of in this mid period where you have more of a standing. Do you think about that stuff, sort of where you fit in the comedy world?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you want to be. I always think, like, truthfully, at the end of it, I don't think you could really ever say you can't really say one comic when you say someone's like, what's the best comic ever? It's even really more than even a Mount Rushmore. It's because it just depends. I mean, Brian Regan is to someone like Richard Pryor was to someone, or to Chappelle, to Burr, to Patrice O'Neill, to, there's these guys or these comics that you think. So, I mean, I always think that you want to be, at least when people talk about great comics, your name is brought up. And people know who you are, and it's like, oh yeah, obviously that, or that's the idea that you would hopefully strive for. And, I don't think about it. It's hard to think about it when you're in it, like when you're doing it, like, and you're not. I'm not at the comedy clubs like I was, when I was starting out. So like, it's like I'll talk to like young comics, when I see them and stuff at shows. But I don't know. It's hard to it's hard to kind of like you really think about it. You don't know where you're at. You're just because you're still trying to, you still think you stink. I mean, you know, it's like as I come up with this, try to come up with a new hour now, it's like you're still like, dude, I'm the worst comedian that's ever, like, you just come up with jokes and you're just, and you can't think of anything new. And you're like, I mean, I am awful. I'm an awful comedian. And you, so you just, so you, those thoughts don't go away. And you're, and so it's like, anytime you could think, you definitely have moments of like, I'm pretty good. And then you have moments of like, you're out of your mind, dude, you're terrible. So it's, you know, it's a hard balance to, I don't know, figure all that stuff out, you know.
With all these, the way that shows are happening now and that you said, you know, you aren't in the clubs. I don't know how much you were in the clubs before things shut down, but do you miss those sort of hanging out with comedians in that way that you don't get to do as much now?
Yeah, absolutely. That was, you know, a lot of my close friends, Jay, Big Jay, and like, I mean, just being around those guys, being around Burr, you know, when Burr was like 10 years, I got to watch Burr kind of come up and get big. Amy Schumer, we were just, he's doing open mics and then she was doing Howard Stern. And you're like, just getting to see that kind of rise was very fun. Dan Soder, one of my best friends, like, yeah, being around all of us hanging out at these clubs and just like, I don't know, just like telling jokes and being funny. And that stuff, I think, helps you be funny because you got to be funny. You're trying to be the funniest out of professional comedian. And so it's very hard to do those. Everybody's so funny. And so like that, you know, that I think translates to the stage. And then New York, why New York is so good is because you get to go, you do get to go on, you get that hang and then you get to do 5 shows in a night. And so you just get on stage so much more and you're around so many good comedians that it just, you know, I miss it every day. I mean, I loved it so much. And when I go back, it's just such a fun hang. I'm definitely glad to now be doing, you know, to be doing theaters and doing an hour and getting to spread out and do longer sets. I'm definitely was like, when I left New York, it was like, I was ready to like, kind of take that, figure out whatever the next step is to be like, all right, what do I got to do to start touring and being on the road more. So I was glad to make that move when I did make that move. But it was, yeah, New York, I wouldn't trade that for anything. That was the greatest. It was, you know, it was college. Yeah. I mean, it was our college,
yeah.
You know?
And now, yeah, I mean, touring and in theaters and doing sort of your own being, once you get bigger, I can imagine that it gets more isolating and a little more lonely when you're just kind of going out by yourself.
Yeah, yeah. That's where you got to start being aware of, like, you know, you could think I'm being very funny, but I'm only in front of people that know who I am. And yeah. So you're like, they're going to laugh at stuff easier than when you were doing shows in New York of people that don't even want to be at the show. And then, so it's like, you got to somewhat have a little more self-awareness to that kind of aspect of things. You just got to be more aware. And I bring comics on the road. And I mean, that's why you bring comics on the road. That's why you have like sometimes two openers, just because you're like, yeah, I just need people to hang out with. Like, I want to be funny with each other and that kind
of
stuff.
I'm sure your podcast that you started this past year is sort of an outlet for some of that as well. Just sort of riffing with funny people. So is that part of why you wanted to do the Nate Land podcast?
Yeah, that was a gigantic part of it, was just to, because we were doing nothing. And then so it is to to be funny. I mean, you got to be, it's like, you got to make jokes. Like, you know, it's a little nerve wracking to be making jokes when you're making them like on the fly, like you are with, you know, a podcast. Like, you're like, if I say the wrong thing, like, that's where you definitely could say the wrong thing. Cause you're just kind of like,
Have you had any moments of that where you said something and somebody called you out?
Not really. I mean, I do pretty good. Not yet, but pretty close. I think someone got mad. I said something about colleges, like, cause the guy in our podcast took a friendship class at Notre Dame. And I was like, that's ridiculous that that's even a class. And so then I think some people got a little upset cause I was like trashing college a little bit, but it's overall, like, no, I
that's
mean,
pretty tame as far as what you could say. That sounds pretty tame.
Yeah, yeah. We posted a clip on Instagram and it was funny. It's like, it was kind of taken out of context. What's funny is I'm the one, we posted it, like I agreed to post this clip. So yeah. I can't even blame it on like, just some,
like, I took myself out of context.
I ruined it for myself. I'm like, you don't understand. You didn't watch the whole clip. And they're like, you posted this, dude. Like, no one. Yeah. I'm like, all right, that's fair. That is fair.
That's fair enough.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. So when you were on last time, we used to end the podcast by asking comedians about the last thing that made them laugh really hard. I kind of want to go a little bigger picture and talk about some of the comedians who have made you laugh the hardest in your life? And starting with maybe something from your childhood, when you think about sort of what really made you laugh as a kid, or some of the first comedy that you saw that really got you, is there somebody from your childhood that really made you laugh?
I remember seeing Sinbad's special Afros and Bell Bottoms. And that was, my parents let us, I mean, I couldn't watch anything, but like he was clean. And so I remember watching that special, and I remember laughing very hard at it. My parents laughing very hard about it. When he was talking about ordering McDonald's and like, how do you, you know, he had a joke about, you know, people go like they don't know the menu and something like that. And so I remember laughing extremely hard at that as a kid. And then I remember seeing Jim Brewer live. It was the first live comic I ever went to at Zany's in Nashville. He had a joke about hitting a bat on a, like a garage pole, something about with his wife. And I remember just like him acting it out and just being in that room and just being like, golly, dude, like it was so funny. And then the first comic, Brian Regan. I mean, Brian Regan's CD, Brian Regan Live. I was in Chicago starting comedy, and my dad called me. He was like, my dad just stopped at a truck stop. He was driving, and you know, in those little bins, bought a CD and brought Brian. He was like, all right, I don't know who this guy is. And you know, this was Brian Regan was obviously selling tickets, but like he wasn't huge and at that time. And so my dad got the CD. And then I remember him calling me. He said he had to pull over because he was laughing so hard. and so then I got that CD and I listened and I felt that same thing, and where it was like, I just, you know, that was like, I was just starting out. I remember I was like, how is this guy not the most famous person alive? Like this, it was so funny, that first CD. And then I, from there, I got to go see him live. He was at Caroline's, and I bought tickets and went and saw him at Caroline's. And just being able to see that was pretty crazy. I mean, those were some moments that were, it was like uncontrollable, where I was like, golly, dude, this is just too funny.
And then when you think about those days in maybe in New York in the clubs, or touring with other comics, is there a story or somebody who really made you laugh from that world? Someone who you were kind of one of your contemporaries?
As stand up, as now,
or just hanging out with them.
Yeah, some of the hardest I'll ever laugh is Joe List. He would tell his. Joe List would always tell very funny stories about starting in Boston. And I remember he told a story. He was featuring. He was the middle act. And so he's back at the bar in the back of the room, and their backs are to the stage. And the guy going on stage was like a new comic, like really hasn't even been on stage. And he was the host, and he's supposed to do like 10 minutes. And so he's up there. And I mean, it's maybe a minute. And there's a big applause. And Joe's like talking to the headline. He's like, oh, guy's doing pretty good, I guess. He's like, must be nice. He's like, guy, he's killing. Because he hears just a big rupture of applause. And then he feels a tap on his shoulder, and he turns and looks, and the guy's standing next to him. And he goes, I just introduced you. And Joe turns around and looks at the crowd. The whole crowd is turned around looking at Joe like, why are you not on stage? And the guy did like 1 minute instead of the 10. And then Joe has to just run on stage.
Yeah, panicked. Yeah.
It was like such a, Big J's got a bunch of great stories too, where him starting off in Philadelphia. Yeah. Those are my favorites, man. Like if that's a comics, just something going wrong.
Things going wrong.
Yeah. Is nothing's better.
Yeah. Do you have a sort of quintessential something going wrong from your own?
You know, I did a show in South Dakota once, and they had a parrot in the room. And then so it was in a bar, like restaurant attached to this hotel. And so the first show Friday, there's a parrot just on that, just out. And so the whole show, the parrot just like repeats kind of what you say. And it kind of ruins the show. I mean, all anybody's thinking about is that parrot. And you're like, you just got to get through it. And then the second show, the parrot was gone. And I was like, where's the parrot at? And he goes, oh, we take him and put him in. We got a room that's for the parrot. And I remember just thinking, why wouldn't you do that the first show?
Yeah. Like only for the second show.
Yeah. I was like, I thought the parrot had to live there. And then it was like, no. The parrot, there's a room for it. I was like, yeah, do that the first show. Why do I have to get mocked by this parrot?
Maybe the parrot wanted to see the first show.
Yeah. That's all he wanted to see. He goes, after the first show, he goes, yeah,
I'm done.
He goes, I'm out.
That's enough.
I get it.
And then finally, I wanted to ask you, is there somebody who's kind of coming up under you, younger comic who you want to shout out, who you think is really funny and really makes you laugh?
So there's a lot of New York guys. Guy that's coming out with me on the road soon, Gary Veeder, which you might know him. I don't know if everybody, but Gary actually got, he got on America's Got Talent and got pretty far on that. But Gary Veeder is very, very funny comedian and a guy that I've been around for a long time in New York that I really enjoyed. Trying to think if there's anybody else I'm trying to think of. Yeah, Gary Veeder is very, very funny. And I believe he's got a CD. And then Mike Vecchione that's on the Tonight Show, which is, I don't know if this will come out, but he was on the Tonight Show March 10th. And so you can go look up that. But Mike Vecchione.
Go back in time
and find it online.
See how he did.
Mike Vecchione's one of the better comics. He's like a Dave Attell type, where it's very funny, very jokes. I always love watching him.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. I'm such a big fan of yours. I was crying laughing at your new special, and I think everyone else who likes comedy will dig it as well. So
that's awesome.
So thanks, man.
Always, man. Anytime, dude. Great talking to you.
Thank you so much to Nate Bargatze for coming back on the podcast. You can stream his new special, The Greatest Average American, starting this Thursday, March 18th on Netflix. And make sure to subscribe to the Nateland podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.